Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit michters.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and this is a really special episode. We're actually taping this on the last day of the Raw Wine Fair, but this is going to air in about a week from now, and it will be my last episode for some time. As those of you who are listening have probably noticed, I haven't been taping the show as regularly, and that's because I'm in the process of opening up Fausto Restaurant in the former Franny's space, and it's getting really close, guys. We're less than a month away. We're hoping to open mid to early December, and it is kind of crunch time for me, so I'm excited about it. I'm going to miss In the Drink, but it will come back in 2018. I'm really excited for the return, but in the meantime, I hope you guys can follow me on Fausto Brooklyn on Instagram and come visit in December when we open. It'll be really exciting. I also want to, I know that for those of you who are wine lovers, I've probably been paying attention to what's going on in the Napa Valley with so many crazy things going on in the world. This is just the one that, obviously affects the wine industry the most. It's pretty devastating what has happened there, but we're all thinking about our friends over in California. Now for fun stuff, I'm really excited about our guest today. We have just two rock star winemakers in the studio. They're blushing and laughing at the same time. They're humbly laughing. These are wines that last year they were at the Raw Wine Fair, but were barely around New York. And I feel like every cool wine list has the wines of Gut Ogau on them. They are amazing wines from the Burgenland in Austria. And in the studio, we have Stephanie and Edouard
Cheppe-Eselberg.
Oh, I practiced it and I messed it up. I'm so excited to have you guys in the studio.
Thank you for inviting us.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you also for, I know that you're in the middle of raw wine of the fair today and you jumped out of the show in order to come to this show.
It's so super busy and we are so excited to be here and that you invited us. And I need to say something because we have also three kids and they know that we are now on the radio station. I have to say hi. If not, they will kill me when we're at home.
You have to say it. Yeah.
Hi, Magdalena. Hi, August. And hi, Matilda. We are not the Kelly family, you know. It doesn't take that long.
It's not like the family on your label. It would take the whole episode to say hi to everyone.
And, exactly.
Well, hi, guys. I hope they're back in Austria right now.
Yeah.
Well, hi, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I feel like your wines are in all these cool restaurants in New York right now. I feel like you guys came out of nowhere and now, I mean, certainly the wines are extremely high quality and they deserve to be all over, but how does that even feel? How did that happen that so many people got excited about them so quickly?
I don't know. Also for us, it's very strange, you know, but New York is such an amazing city for us. It's so much full of energy. People are so open-minded and asking questions and being open. And we get so much respond of the wines and people are so kind. And we get also so much compliments, which are crazy, you know, like, and we are super humble to be part of also Raw Wine Fair because it helps all the growers who are going in this natural approach. And yeah, it's a perfect platform. And also we need all the restaurants, all the good sommeliers to give the idea what we have to the guests. And it's great for us.
And after all, you have to say, the way we understand wine, the way we grow wine, is a very sensitive matter. So actually, only a couple of years ago, we were kind of shying off to bring the wines overseas to the States because we didn't know how they would be treated there. And finally, like since a year approximately, the wines have arrived there. And thanks to our partner, Jenny and Francois, who's bringing the wine in, we can really rely on them placing them in the perfect places where they are treated with care. And that's what they need as well.
Now, I know that a lot of producers who go to Raw Wine Fair also go because they're looking for a new distributor in New York. And now that you have an established distributor, what's the value for you guys? Especially you make not a lot of wine, right? And there's a high demand for them. But what's the value for you to go to a fair like this?
Yeah, I think like Eduard also said, it's all about energy. It's all about personalities. And also that's why we described also our wines as they would be person. They are fictional faces. And it's all about at the end, yeah, the wine is sold, but we love to see who is selling it and who is getting in touch with it and who is drinking it. And this is, it's something very personal also for us. It's not only a business. It's, it's our life. It's,
And since these are literally living wines, they are full of life and full of energy. Also for us, it's so exciting to see how they behave in other places. And that's the feeling we have with our wines. We would never say we know them deeply, because they would always surprise us, whether when we have them, when we get to meet them again, where we get to meet them, with which company. And we can tell now, after since we've been last year at the Raw and now we are back, they really feel comfortable here in your area. And that's also good for us to know and to see how well behaved they are, even though we can't always follow them to the States.
Wow. Are there some areas where they don't behave so well as in New York? I take a lot of pride in knowing that they behave well here. I like that on some level. But are there places where you're like, maybe we'll focus more?
Not that you should talk bad about somewhere else. Definitely tell, because again, we're talking of energy, mm-hmm. of emotions, and wine is a drink which can really transport these emotions much more than most of the other drinks can. And they are sensitive. So we realized wherever people are open-minded, wherever people are ready to think out of the box, mm-hmm. this is where the wines feel at home instantly. And they don't need to warm up. They're just there. And certainly, I mean, New York is the place where people are so much open-minded and always free in their mind. And that's why probably it works so well also here, as in the rest of the States as well.
Mm-hmm. And was it like that when you first started back home as well? Because I think it was a little bit of a departure. Burgenland's known for high-quality red wines, but your style is maybe a little bit of a departure from the common Burgenland wine.
Yeah, what do you think? It's like, I don't know if you know Burgenland. It's like really different from the other part from Austria. It's not only Alps and the Sound of Music picture what you have in your mind. It's like really silent, it's flat, it's beautiful, but it's not superficial beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's something, maybe on the second glance, it's getting you, this landscape. And I think, the wine really show also exact the same thing what the landscape is doing, they're also maybe second time, on the second glance, beautiful than the landscape is.
And can you tell us about how you started the winery? I think 2007 was when you first came together to do it, and you're a married couple, yes?
Yes.
And how does that work out? How did you start the winery?
It's been exciting times, like 10 years ago, but we met each other and we very quickly got engaged, and we knew we would want to create something together. At that point when we met, we didn't think necessarily about growing wine. It could have been something else as well. But then we decided to go for that. And we found this beautiful place, which we could get back in shape. And we had these old vineyards. And like one thing came to the other. And for us, I mean, I come from a wine growers family. So I wasn't trained to be a winemaker, but still I had some idea. But Steffi's from restaurant business and studied photography, so she was certainly the one who was more like free in her mind, and that brought us quickly to the path where we said, okay, we want to let loose everything which was so typical at that time for viticulture in the area, and everything which is we're so educated and trained to a certain extent. And we could start from scratch, but we had this amazing background of the old vineyards and the tradition of this devastated estate. Yeah, and that was how we started. And we didn't have any clue of the outcome. We never thought that 10 years later we would sit next to you and have a radio interview in New York. So it's a really crazy story, but a journey for us.
You probably thought it would be more glamorous than sitting in a shipping container in the back of a pizza restaurant. But
actually, we want to be in the late night show. But it's the first step, maybe. Yeah.
You can practice. You can practice here. So I know the vineyard that you found was one that had been abandoned almost, right? It was in bad shape. And from what I read, no one had made wine there for about 20 years. What happens to vines when they haven't been touched for 20 years? What happens to the soil? I know the vine is a creeping plant that keeps going further. It must have been a ton of work to restore it.
It was to a certain extent, but the story you are telling now is not completely true. So
okay.
the vineyards have been worked on a minimum effort, and the crop was picked to sell the grapes. So they haven't been completely abandoned, but they've been in a bad shape and they've never been really taken carefully care of in the recent vintages. But the vineyards, to get them back where we want to have them, is still an ongoing journey. We don't think that we've already reached the goal to get the perfect balance, but each vintage we feel, and also we get the response other people feel, there's a huge leap forward every vintage regarding the balance, the harmony, the life in the soil being also able to be shown in the wines. And yeah, so it's
a lifetime project. Yeah. It's not something
where but you again, say, okay. An amazing journey for us.
But it sounds like in some level you had a little bit of a head start with vines that already had some age to them.
Yeah.
Right? What's the age range on the vines there?
No, that they are between 40 and 60 years, which is for our area also already old, because most of the young wine producers, they take everything out to get really lots of quantity and not really the quality what we think that the region can have if you are longing for it. And this is also the reason why we said, okay, let's do wine, but we are both very quality driven and say, okay, let's do Burgenland in the glass. Let's show the region in the whole beauty in the glass.
Were there wines that inspired you and gave you an idea as to how you wanted to do it, or when you were originally planning the vineyard?
Not really, but what we knew that we don't want to interfere and we don't want to, a little bit hands off, you know, like really... showing the vineyards, the landscape. Yeah, not ego-driven wines, not technique-driven wines, how they are made in the cellar. It's more, hands-off work a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And there's, of course, lots of like fellow growers, friends who are as person, as the approach they have are inspiring. But the wines, you can't compare our wines to any other wines. This is on a very, the way I say it is not because we're so convinced that we have something special, but we're convinced that we have something unique, because the wines we produce can only come from our vineyards, from our soil, because they are not in a way changed. There's no interference. So what we always want to pronounce every vintage is this uniqueness. And even if the neighbor would work the same, it still would make a difference. A slight one, but still, because there's another age of vines, another topography, another climate in the cellar, whatever comes into account on this. And that's again the beauty for us.
And also not comparing, you know, like also that's why also the faces on the labels, you can't compare people, and we also don't want to compare the wines from different regions, and also not saying, okay, maybe this is not that good. And all these natural wines, they're amazing because they talk their own story, and this is the beauty of it, you know.
We're talking with Stephanie and Eduard of Gutagau Winery in Burgenland, Austria. We're going to take just a quick break. We'll be right back.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small. From careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat-cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. and no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food & Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said, it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's, phenomenal. For more information, visit michters.com or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
And we're back with Stephanie and Edouard of Gut Ogau Winery. I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name this time, but I'm loving your wines. And I remember the first time that I tasted your wines, my friend Dave Foss, who is a big lover of Austrian wines, he went to visit you and Moritz had dinner. He said he had dinner at your family's restaurant, and they said it's definitely the best restaurant in Burgenland. He's like, it's outstanding.
Thank you.
He brought back the bottle, and we drank it on my roof, and it was before they were imported here to New York. So I feel very cool because I feel like I saw the band before they played the big concerts. But he is always someone who, we did a lot of wine classes together, and he would just always describe wine as people, like, oh, she's a little shy, or he's like really boisterous and annoying, and he would always describe wines that way. So for me, it was perfect to see Dave bring this bottle with a picture of someone on the label. But I think it's brilliant what you're doing with the labeling. Probably if you're aware of the wines, you I'm sure know first the quality of how delicious they are. But the second thing that most people know about is the labels and how unique that is. How did you guys come up with the story of the three generations of the family and the personalities?
I mean, it was a fun situation. Because in the first year, because we are working with old wines and we don't interfere in the cellar, we realized in the first year of the first vintage in the cellar that the wines have so much characters that we decided, okay, on a long night drinking lots of wine, okay, let's describe them as they would be person. Fictional faces, no meaning with other family members, because some people think that they are real family members. They are not. And and it felt so right, and it was so clear for us. And at the beginning, we also didn't think that it has so much impact and that people are so crazy after that, because, yeah, for us, it was normal to have a natural product and also, yeah, and unique product, which you see as people.
And again, the different characters is not something which we created in our minds, but it's been created by the natural potential of the different vineyards. And also the family idea for us is a reference to show that we treat the vineyards with the same love, the same energy, the same passion, you name it. We don't make any difference. And in the end, we wouldn't judge. We wouldn't say young generation is good, the parent generation is better, and the best is the grandparents. But sometimes you just want to make a party, and you probably surround yourself with rather young, energetic persons. Sometimes you want to philosophize in front of the chimney. You'd rather sit along with some more experienced persons. And this is also the diversity in our region. We have all these different vineyards, these different mm-hmm. plots, and they show these different personalities. But each of them is really, really representative for what our region stands for and, of course, our approach stands for.
Now, I'm just remembering, when you go back to the Raw Wine Fair, if you haven't met her yet, you should meet Chiara Pepe of Emidio Pepe.
Yeah, she's a good friend of
us. Oh, she's a good friend. Because, you know, her grandfather always describes wine. He always says, you know, drinking a young wine is like playing with a kid.
Yeah,
and,
it's true.
And it could be a lot of fun, but there won't be as much depth. And then drinking an older wine is like... So he also has the personification of... Yeah. Of wine. Oh, okay, that's good. I'm not surprised that she's a good friend of yours.
And by the way, we love the wines as well.
Oh yeah, me too. Me too. Have the wines ever? This is really they're really not based on anyone you know. I'm sure there's some friends or something.
No, it's fun because lots of people see some family members from there in one of the other face, you know? It's like everybody has some relationship with one or the other wine. I don't know why.
They relate to them. And you've hired a local artist, right, to do the labels? And are they drawing the labels every year, is that right?
No, the label stays the same because the character comes from the soil and from the vineyards and from the different plots what we pick together and ferment together. It's not about the grapes, because that's why we don't put the grape varieties on the labels, because they're for us more secondary than anything else. No, he's a friend, but he feels like not an artist in this case. He's like more, I'm feeling like a police officer who is has to draw the character what you are telling me to do. And yeah.
And this, from the start, of course, it was a question of feeling, but we didn't have the proof when we started, but it proved quite quickly that the approach we have, so as Steffi said, every vintage, the same pieces of vineyards go into the same wine personality. So the really, really strong impact on the character is the soil, and this is the same every vintage. So we have this recognizability in character, even though, of course, the vintages do make a difference. Sometimes the people or our wine family is a little more extroverted, sometimes more introverted, sometimes like well-fed, sometimes a little more on a diet, but the character personality is the same, and so we didn't feel the need to redraw the faces.
Okay.
So we have these deep roots, which are the predominant character-giving aspect. And then is vintage, and only lastly, and this is not important, is the grape varietals.
Interesting. And you studied photography, right? So an analogy that I always like to use, I don't know, I'd love to hear if you agree or disagree with this, is that, and you have a grape, it should be like the lens of the camera. Because if it's the right lens, or it's the right grape for the soil, then you can really show the soil well. But if it's the wrong one, then it muddies up the the lens isn't the most important thing. The grape isn't the most important thing.
Exactly.
It's showing the subject and the soil in this case.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes, I'm right.
For my opinion, you're right.
If it's okay, we will quote you in the future because it's also a nice idea for people to make them aware. In modern understanding of wine, the grape varietals, especially in our area and like in the German-speaking countries, is far too predominant in understanding wine. In the Roman countries like France, Italy, Spain, the story is a little different because those are countries which by tradition are much more terroir-driven than the German-speaking countries are. And we are really lucky to have these old vineyards because they've been mainly planted in the 60s, 70s, and that was the time when still the focus was on the traditional Austrian varietals. And those have been in the area for centuries. And why? Because, again, it's a good lens for the region, for the terroir there is. So we didn't feel the need to question this, and we are happy to work with these grapes, showing the terroir much more than their grape typicity.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy to hear this, because this is something I've said to wine people or people who aren't as interested in wine, but never anyone with a photography expertise. So I'm very happy about this.
Steffi studied photography, so she knows exactly what it's all about.
So can you tell us about your 2016 vintage, which I know is a departure from what you normally do?
And yeah, I'm
looking at a bottle right now that you brought along.
Yeah, 16 was a little bit crazy for us, but we did the best out of it. We had in, I think, end of April. I'm never so sure about it because all these negative things I erase in my brain. I think it was end of April, yeah. May. We had like 3 days in raw frost, and in summer we had also hail, which hit us really, really hard. And then we went through the vineyards and we decided, because of the small amount of grapes what we have, that we only produce 3 wines. It's like one white, one rosé, and one red. It means like we took all the vineyards for Timotheus, Theodora, Emmeram, and Mechthild for the white wine. Rosé is Winifred and Josephine. And the red is also very special for us. It's Bertoldi, Athanasius, and Joshuari. And also here the idea was, and this we started already in 15, to say we don't make any differentiation. I mean, maybe it's a little bit sophisticated, but we are so in this idea of wine and we live it every day. And of course, we question everything. We discuss a lot of stuff. And yeah, sometimes we fight. And, you know, it's all really? This production coming together. And we decided that, white and red vineyards, we treat the same. And why do we do a differentiation in the cellar? Who is saying it that red wine needs to be treated like this and the white needs to be treated like the other way? And that's why in 16 we said, okay, we close the gap between white and red. And it means they are both vinified in the same way. It's only red grapes and the other one is white grapes. We don't want to discriminate one or the other color.
So does that mean a skin maceration with the white grapes?
Yeah, it's like with both wines, we had like a minor part is on skins and a major part is directly pressed.
Okay. And so a shorter time on the skins for the red and longer on the white for this vintage. So did they all spend the same amount of time on the skins? And
Exactly the same. It's only red grapes and white grapes.
So you close your eyes, you don't differentiate by the color or by the making. Mm-hmm. So you only differentiate the wines by the terroir, which is actually the journey, the path we want to go for. We took the grapes for granted. We took over what we got. But who, as Steffi mentioned, whoever said we should treat them differently, why not treating them the same? And why we do only partly ferment on the skins is because for us it's the perfect balance between the structure we have, the fruit, the elegance, and this very particular crispy, fresh minerality, which is better to be pronounced for our understanding if we reduce the impact of the skins, of the skin contact.
At the end, our goal is, or where we would like to see our wines, it's like, that you close your eyes, you drink a glass of good Aargau, and you are having this feeling that you're sitting in this region, you're having the soil in your mouth, and it's like maybe reading a good book, you also go deep in this story, and at the end maybe we want to tell the story of our region in a glass of wine.
And are you able to taste the soil in the same way as in the previous vintages, even though it's a different idea? So the terroir is still pronounced.
Even more and more. So that's again what we simply realized, that through working biodynamically, the soil is more and more releasing the character it has. So it's of course quite obvious because we're building up life in the soil, and it's really important to have a lively soil, a balanced soil, to have the chance for the roots to get on all the minerality and all the particular matter which is in the soil. If you have a dead soil, there might be even lots of mineralics inside, but they are not available for the roots. So we need to have this balanced, lively soil, and that's what we are working for.
And you guys are now certified biodynamic. Is that accurate?
Yep.
Is that something that you sought to do from the first vintage?
Yeah, for us it was. Always. Yeah, I mean, for us it was no question that we do a certification, because for us it felt right, and for us it's also like, the wines are here in New York or everywhere else in the world, and why not showing open how you work and
In the end, we are Demeter certified, and Demeter is an international certification for biodynamic farming, but it's much more than this. It's kind of a group of interest, so there's an exchange and everything, and in the end we want to a certain extent build up the confidence or the trust as well through the label. And
it's also lifestyle, it's not only working in the vineyards like this, it's like how you live your life, how you treat your animals, how you treat your kids, how you see the world maybe differently.
Can you give us an example as to how a biodynamic lifestyle pertains to your life outside of wine?
A lot of things, really.
You simply start questioning lots of things, and this is kind of also a natural development. In the end, also when we started, for us it was more like a way of production than a way of living. But seeing and living according to the rhythm of nature makes you, to our understanding, very humble. And you need to accept, if you go the road we go, that you can't control everything. I think modern humankind is always tempted to think we can control nature, we can have everything under our like idea, whatever. But there's so much which nature can give us, and we can accept it and we can take it for granted, but we will never understand. And especially working biodynamically, you are working with the rhythm of nature, with the energy, with vibes, whatever comes from the cosmic, comes from the soil. And we are simply too small to to realize why things are happening and what drives things, but we can simply accept, and that's something which probably modern humankind lacks a little, you know, this humbleness towards nature. And if you get this feeling, of course you question the way you consume, the question you treat other people, the social aspect of working with other people, integrating other people in the work, all these things. So we're certainly, this is also something which is a problem in modern agriculture. We're accepting that we can't grow every vintage, we can't grow every year. It's not possible on a personal scale, yes, mm-hmm. but economically it's simply not possible. We have to accept sometimes we have more, sometimes we have less, sometimes nature is more giving, sometimes nature is more reluctant to give. And that's something which is probably important to come back to this point as well in modern economy, in general, in modern thinking.
Yeah, and doing maybe also when something negative happens, do the best out of it, you know, without... Yeah, everything has a reason.
I like that. Yeah, I really appreciate it. And I think that's a really great way for us to end. I'll let you go back to your, I'm sure, extremely busy table at the Raw Wine Fair. Stephanie, Edouard, it was such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
I hope nobody's blaming us that it's your last show. So.
No, you can blame Fausto Restaurant.
Yeah, good luck for that.
Yeah, all the best.
I'm trying to go out on a high note is the idea. But we'll be back in 2018 for sure.
And we'll be back as well.
You'll be back as well. Great.
Yes.
Again, thank you so much. I absolutely love your wines. The Gute Gal wines are just absolutely beautiful. They're at a lot of great restaurants in Brooklyn, I think here as well at Roberta's. So it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all of you for listening. It's been a great year of In the Drink. It's the end of my fifth year. And it's been such an honor. I know that there is a Heritage Radio fundraiser going on. So if you go to heritageradionetwork.org and donate, that would be very appreciated. It's what keeps this kind of programming going on. So please go ahead and do that. And if you could follow us at Fausto Brooklyn on Instagram, you can see all of the updates and everything that's going on. Thanks again so much for listening. This has been Joe Campanelli for In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.